Willie and D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan. We await Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan as the Titans prepare for the Green Bay Packers. As soon as Brian Callahan steps behind the podium at St. Thomas Sports Park, we will bring his live thoughts to you. But until then, we will continue the conversation about Jeffrey Simmons. And we received a text on our text line, if it will load. There it is. That I think would hit near and dear to Derek's heart as it relates to Jeffrey Simmons. Dylan says, Ray Lewis is considered one of the best linebackers of all time, and I personally believe he was so good because of the linemen in front of him. Look up the names of just two of the guys in front of him, and those guys were absolute monsters and took up space, allowing Lewis to flow freely and make the plays that needed to be made.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not sitting here and saying, just like Willie, I'm not sitting here and saying that, oh, Jarrett is completely 100% wrong. You know, he doesn't see what else goes on with Jeffrey Simmons and how he affects the defense and this. And I'm not saying that he's wrong because, listen, when your pay scale jumps tremendously like that, then there are things that are expected of you. And sacks being that in that position, being that that position has changed, sacks is a part of it. And when you're not getting those sacks in a high volume, then people tend to look at you a little bit different. They tend to look at you as, yeah, you're a good player, but you're not a great player. You're not an elite player. And I just think that just looking at it solely from that perspective isn't you know, truly watching and accepting what Jeffrey Simmons brings to the table in regards to his ability to play the defensive tackle position. Again, he may not ever be a 12, 13, 14 sack guy, but just like Ray Lewis, those guys behind him appreciate everything that he does. They know when Jeffrey Simmons is on the field, he makes their job easier. He may have to sacrifice. And see, people never even thought about that. You just look at what he's not doing. You don't know the scheme of the defense. Sometimes within schemes, we are taught, or defensive linemen are taught, take up two guys and allow the other guy to get the sack. Or you stunt to this side and they may take you, but it's opening up for somebody else. Or somebody else stunt and you may come up underneath them and get the sack. There will be a lot of attention geared towards your way no matter what. Those are the things you got to look at. You just can't look at it and say, well, Jeffrey Simmons lined up on a nose tackle or the guard, he should get a sack. Well, that may not be his responsibility. If he gets the sack, great. But that may not be his responsibility. His responsibility may be to take the guard and the center somehow, some way. Make both of those guys occupy you so Big Sweat can loop around, or Sebastian can loop around, or Arden Key, one of those guys, can loop around and get to the quarterback. You got to see the big picture of it. You're just looking at one little isolated stat. Again, I'm not saying that Jared is completely wrong, but you got to look at it from a holistic standpoint. You just can't look at one singular thing. And I'm not saying that one singular thing is completely wrong, but take Jeffrey Simmons off of that defensive line. That's the litmus test right there. Take him off that defensive line and see where they are at. That's all I got to say. Remove him and see how good they are up front.
So for context, in terms of annual average salary, Jeffrey Simmons at $23.5 million is the sixth highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL, according to SpotTrack, behind Chris Jones, Christian Wilkins, Nnamdi Matabike, Quinnen Williams, and Derek Brown. Now, I pulled up Jeremy Fowler's story, the rankings, the positional rankings, and Willie, you know, you and I are big nerds in general, but particularly when it comes to statistical analysis. And the first line in the blurb about Simmons, I think, brings up a good point, which Derek is talking about. Fowler writes, quote, Simmons is the classic eye test player. His stats aren't always gaudy, but coaches and scouts know he wrecks game plans.
I think that's a great point. And I do think we've come around to a day and age where there are better ways to grade what he does and what he does and quantify what he does well. That is what analytics are setting out to do, right, is to assign a value. Because if there's one thing that we want to take out of this conversation is do not just look at a guy's sack total and say this guy is good, bad, or okay. Look at the job that that guy has to do. Sacks are just one part of it. So I would be curious, and Adam, maybe that's a project for you and I, to see if we can find some other things of how Jeffrey Simmons is grading. But I would say that I'm putting sacks in a bucket with other ways that the game changers happen. Because I think Jared's point is, if it's an elite star player, then that player should pop off the page a few times during a game, whether he's sacking the quarterback or stuffing a guy on a third and one or just showing up or deflecting a pass, showing up one way or the other. I think I'd like to see a little bit more from Jeffrey Simmons to where I can say, okay, Jeffrey Simmons is having a big year.
Because I think when he's playing, that's what
happens.
I'm sorry to interject, but we have Brian Callahan. He's live at the podium. We'll take you there now.
Don't see anybody likely missing time this weekend, so we're still in a pretty good spot. Again, normal nicks and bruises as we played a couple games now, and so there'll be some things, guys that are limited or sit and all those things, but as of right now, I feel pretty good about availability for this weekend. Other than that, I'll let you guys fire away.
After last week, NPF gives up 13 pressures. Mm-hmm. Is it just on him to be better, or do you start having to game plan to help him out a little bit?
It's both. I can do a better job helping, and then he can do a better job executing. And I think that they would all say the same thing. There's so many good rushers in this league, and there's good players, and there's no shame in that. There's no shame in getting help on either side. We did a little bit of it in the game. Probably should have done a little more of it, but yeah, there's a time and a place to help in the rush. There's a time and a place where we have to get five out in a pattern, and that's a part of it. And you know, it's a kind of a give and take balance, but certainly not something that I'm not used to. I've had to help on both edges quite a bit over the years, and that's just a part of playing offensive football nowadays with these guys that play on the other side. So certainly has work cut out for him with Rashawn Gary as well. So it's a challenging front to play against this week.
Was up here, I guess, earlier in the week, he talked about different techniques that Bill was teaching the O-line guys. Does that take maybe a game or two, even though they've been doing it off-season training camp, does that maybe take a game or two to adjust a little bit to some of those techniques?
Yeah, I think all growth and improvement takes time. There's certain things that might be more natural than others for certain guys. It sort of varies player to player. And I think that those things come with actual game reps. You know, you can do as much as you want in practice. You can simulate it. You play against your own team. But there's different styles and different body types and different rush counters. And there's a lot of things that go on. And for those guys, it's just banking of reps. You know, obviously you don't have forever to make improvement, but there does take some growth. There is some uniqueness to it and some technicalities that only improve as you get more shots at it.
Does that mean that you and your dad and Will need to grin and bear it and be patient?
There's an element of that. There's an element of patience. There's an element of we got to get better fast. You know, there's some urgency to get better, and I think that's the most important point is that the urgency to improve quickly is what makes teams in the NFL. If you can get better quickly, you can make improvements, make corrections, and not repeat mistakes, you're going to have a pretty good chance to improve at a rate that's going to give you a competitive advantage. But we need to improve, certainly. There's, a patience part, but there's also an urgency part where things got to get better quickly.
Along those lines, when you went back and watched this past week's game with Will, and you point out, you know, maybe the ball would be better here than there, those sorts of things. Was that considerably less than after watching the week one game?
Yeah, I thought everything that Will's improvement from week one to week two to me was noticeable. Everything about how he moved in the pocket, where he had his eyes, just everything about playing the position was better in week two. I think offensively as a whole, there was a lot of things that were better from week one to week two. We got to get a lot better between week two and week three. And that's just the nature of the NFL, especially in the early part of the season, is how quickly you can improve your team and what you do well. I'm really pleased with how he played for the most part, and that didn't change after we watched the tape. And every week you're going to go through with a quarterback, and there's going to be a handful of plays that you could say, hey, what if you could have gone here or here? Here's some things that could have been different. So that's a normal process, whether you throw for 350 yards or 150 yards. That doesn't change. So that part is pretty consistent. But I thought that Will made a really nice improvement from week one to week two.
Sometimes we conflate the short passing game with the quick game. And looking, you guys are near the bottom of the league in terms of passing plays that develop in 2.5 seconds. But the short passing game has been effective for you so far. So is there an emphasis on speeding up the short, quick game in order to take some pressure off the offensive line?
That's all part of the equation. I'd say sometimes what gets confused, gets taken off as either quick game or short passing is, you know, we pushed the field a couple of times in that game where we didn't have the routes or we didn't have the time to get to the routes to develop, and the ball gets checked down. And sometimes that gets looked at as a quick game or we're not throwing the ball down the field. Now, the call is to throw the ball down the field, but the pressure, the coverage, whatever it may be, the ball gets checked down. And so it comes off as a play where the yardage isn't far down the field, but the intent was to throw the ball down the field. Sometimes you don't get that. And part of Will's growth and development has been that I tell him all the time, I'll call as many deep shots as I can during the game and deep play action and things. As long as it's not there, we don't force it and we check the ball down when we have a chance, and then I'll call it again. And so sometimes those things get skewed. But yes, there is an element of the quick game that does help when you're having struggles up front, that you don't put those guys in position to have to hold on to blocks for long periods of time. And so that's definitely something that we mixed in and will be part of what we do offensively.
With Hopkins, and I think it was 26 snaps, I know you're trying to get as much as you can when he's on the field, but when you're calling these plays, and there are times when he's open, he may not have been the first read, but how do you approach that with Will to get him to make sure that you're maximizing when Hopkins is out there on the field?
Yeah, that's on me to get him as the primary more often than I have. There's going to be plenty of that as we move forward. And the other part of it for Will is that I don't ever tell Will who to throw to. You know, you start forcing balls to players because you feel like you need to get it to them. That's when you can get yourself in trouble as a quarterback and as a play caller. So you call the plays you think are best suited for what you're going against. You have players in mind you're trying to get the ball to. But ultimately, you know, the progression dictates where the ball goes, and anybody can get the ball in any given play, and that's the part of it that I think matters most. So, yeah, there were some plays that Hop was the primary. He was covered as the primary. The ball went elsewhere. But that's on me to do a better job of putting in position to get the ball more frequently. And again, as he's felt good and feels healthy and ready to roll, that role will increase, and you'll see more of that.
There were some plays where he may not have been the primary but was open. Do you go over that and just say, hey, man, make sure you look there? How do you handle that part of it?
Just like you would any other play where the ball goes. And sometimes plays look open because the ball gets thrown and guys react. Other times they are open. You know, that's a real part of it. And so you go through the process and you say, why'd you throw it here? Here was the read. Sometimes it's as simple as read one was open and we took it. And then, sure, he's coming open on a shallow cross across the field. He's the third part of the progression. And had we gotten there, the ball would have likely went there. So that's how those things work. And you just coach through those processes, pointing out what coverages these certain routes come open on, and try to have a better feel the more reps you bank on concepts. But, yeah, I never tell a quarterback who to throw it to because that clouds their judgment and their vision on what we're trying to get accomplished schematically. And so it's more on me to put Hop in the spots where he's likely to get the ball.
The third highest first read rate in the league right now, is that by design? Is that something that you're wanting to see him get through his progression more? And how much of the time he has to do that, is that an impact on it as well?
It's a combination of things. We've had some first reads that have been open. That's part of it. There's some times where he's been forced to get the ball out a little bit quicker because of some of the pressure. And then some of it may be work through the progression. You know, it's just kind of a threefold approach. And I would say that there's every game is going to have those plays in it. That's not like unique to a bad game or a good game. That's every game. And so you just keep coaching through the progressions and keep talking about it. And eventually those plays, as you bank reps, they become more comfortable, and quarterbacks are able to get from one to two to three a lot faster because they've gotten reps banked on the concepts. And that usually comes with time and repetition.
80% three wide. I don't know what it was week one, but you got two inactive tight ends. Mm-hmm. Is a time going to come where you need more there, or is it advantageous depth, or can they help you on special teams where you're struggling?
Yeah, those are all things that we've had conversations about on where those guys could help us. You know, they sort of play the same roles as linebackers do in special teams coverage for the most part. And we got some linebackers that do a pretty good job. So, yeah, right now they're advantageous depth, I think is the way to put it. They're guys that we think can develop into good players and can help us. We may need them at some point this season. So they're always on the ready for that. And, again, we've had a handful more of our heavier personnels pop up in the second half last week. And if that's something that we potentially lean more into, they could find some roles. So as of right now, with everybody healthy, they're depth and developmental players.
Probably along the same lines, but hindsight 2020, you guys let go some kind of key special teams guys in the 53. Any regrets at all that maybe you should have had a guy given some of the special team situations that have popped up?
No, not from a personnel standpoint. You know, I felt pretty good about the guys that have been in there and the guys that we kept. So I don't look back at that with any regret on the roster construction.
Dose of Josh Jacobs, and how were they able to run the ball so well Sunday when people knew it was coming?
Well, two things. One, Josh Jacobs is a very good player. I think they do their offensive line, I think, is probably underrated. I think they do a nice job both in the run and pass pro. And then ultimately, I think that offensive staff there is high level. They do a really good job. Matt's an excellent play caller and play designer and schemer, and put his guys in great position to have a chance to win the game, and they executed it very well. But I've always been a fan of Matt and the things that he's done offensively and the way that he leads that team there. I mean, they've done a really nice job for a number of years now, so that's the biggest reason to me is they got good players and a good scheme, and they did a nice job making it come to life, and I thought Malik did a really nice job of keeping the team in position to win. You know, he didn't turn the ball over, and basically executed exactly as I'm sure he was asked to. So really a tip of the cap to all those guys on offense. They did a great job on their offensive staff, on their offensive roster of executing a well-designed plan.
I know different roster means different schemes, but when you watch that, how similar was what they were doing with Malik to what you might have envisioned doing with him?
There's definitely some things that they did with him that we did elements of as he was here. But yeah, they've opened up some things that they probably don't do a lot of with Jordan Love, but that Malik has a unique skill set for, and I thought it was really well designed with the quarterback runs, the RPOs, all the motions and the different styles of runs. It was very, very well designed.
Have you talked to or texted with Malik since the trade at all?
I did not. I know Bo and Nick both have. They both wished him luck before his first start, and I'm happy for him that he had a chance to go play. That was pretty cool to see. I mean, everyone knows Malik. Malik's a phenomenal, phenomenal person. Loved being around him, loved having him here. And he went to Green Bay for the opportunity that he's been given now is to play. And he's done a nice job of it.
Passing stats are down across the league compared to years past. I'm curious why you think that is and how you view your play calling against that trend.
Yeah. This is probably a much deeper conversation than right here for a quote, but I think the proliferation of teams playing with shell defense, with two high defenses, they're doing a really good job of stopping a run with two high defenses. A lot of it has to do with the front movement. Teams are doing a really good job of keeping everything bottled up. I think the difference in quarterbacks, there's a lot of young quarterbacks playing. I think that's part of it. It's early in the season, which is the other part. You know, there's some teams finding their footing. But, yeah, there's a lot of reasons, I think, that there's a down offensive performance. I think part of it is just the style of defense has changed in the last couple of years, and they're doing a nice job on defense. And I think you see the mismatches that you have. I mean, these defensive lines it's every week I feel like you're going against defensive lines that have three and four guys that are real problems, and they're good. They're hard to block, and that's another part of it. So that, to me, is a very, 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 very general note on what I think it is. I'm sure there's lots of opinions out there, but, you know, I think there's a definite shift in the defensive structures and how they're being played.
Traylon's gotten quite a few snaps in the first two games, only has one catch for 2 yards. What's kind of been the problem in getting him unlocked, so to speak?
I wouldn't say that it's been a problem. It's just the ball has sort of gone elsewhere. I mean, there's been a couple of times, just like D-Hop, where he's been open and the ball's gone somewhere else. That's just sort of part of playing receiver in an offense where there's three receivers on the field. But, yeah, I would have loved to see him come down with that catch on Sunday. That would have gone a long way to probably not asking that question. You know, I think there's a production part of it that's we got to find a way to get him some production as well. And, again, I think just the general passing game has to be more productive. And once we get to that point, I think it'll even itself out eventually. But, you know, through two games, we've not been as good in the passing games I think we're capable of.
Built in a day, a lot of new coaches, a whole bunch of new players. How hard is it to stress patience and trust in everything to both your players and also yourself?
I don't have any problem with it. I don't mean that to come off the wrong way, but I'm very confident in our process. I'm very confident in our coaches. I'm very confident in what we do and how we do it. That also goes for the players. I'm incredibly confident in the players that we have, the players that we've added. I believe very much in what those guys stand for what the locker room represents, for how they come to work every day. All of those things, we don't have the tangible results yet that come with wins, but all of the other things are working the way they're supposed to. And that part gives me a ton of faith in the process. And I actually just talked to our leadership group today that, you know, the definition of faith is belief in something without proof. And right now we don't have any proof that we're doing things the right way when it comes to wins and losses, but that's coming. And I believe in all those things very, very much. And I believe in my ability. I believe in the ability of people in this building to make sure that we get things squared away and keep pushing forward. So that part I don't have a problem with. There is some growth. There's some things that we have to get better at in a hurry. There's a patience part, but again, like I said earlier, there's also an urgency part that goes into whatever we have to get better at. We have to get better at it fast, because there's still good teams. Every week we go out there, there's good teams. You don't play right, they're going to beat you. And we got to be on the other end of that where we take advantage of a team that doesn't do things the right way enough. And so it's a process. It's ongoing. But trust me, there's plenty of urgency to get to that landmark. And I would love to come in here on Monday after a win. I'd feel really good about that.
With Ernest Jones, just to come in here, learn this defense as quickly as he has, and be a factor 2 weeks in?
Very impressed, but not at all surprised by that. I mean, he was a captain in LA. He's a 4-year starter. He's a really good football player. And for whatever reason, they felt like that he was somebody that they could afford to let go of. And I'm glad they did, but I've played against him previously. I know what he's capable of, and to see to be able to add that caliber of player in person has been a huge benefit to our defense. And he's really done a nice job. You know, it's a very different style of defense, and so learning a bunch of new things and new words, it's like learning a new language to some degree. And he's done a great job. So all the things I expected from him, I've seen, and it's been fun to see him get more comfortable and get to know the team better and really have fun playing football.
Got hurt, and so that may change things this week or next. But when they were both healthy in week two, you still saw the similar split that we saw from them in week one. Do you stand by wanting to get them as 50-50 as possible, or do you feel them kind of settling into different roles?
No, I do feel the same way. I feel like I would still like to get more touches for Tajay. I think one of the things we have to do is when we've gotten first downs, when we've gotten that first down, I think we've moved into scoring position just about every time. Our issue has been the three and outs and keeping drives alive. We need more opportunities. We need more drives. We need more first downs. And I think that'll even itself out over time. In a small sample size, it feels like there's a big disparity. I don't think over time it'll look like that at the end. And then obviously him getting hurt in the game skewed that some as well. So I do see it. I see Tajay as a really impactful player and a guy that we have to make sure that has his requisite touches to help our offense.
You saw day one, too, you have to hold back a little because I know he will play probably with a broken ankle if he's
good. Yeah, he's tough-minded. He's physically tough. And so when they have moments that require a little bit of restraint and some rest, we have to sort of save him from himself in that regard. And he doesn't like it. He does not like to rest. He does not like to take practice time off or game time off, but it's in the best interest for him as you try to make sure he's available and a viable option for 17 games.
That was Tennessee Titans head coach Brian Callahan. If anything else comes out of his news conference, we will bring it to you. But coming up next, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us. We'll break down Brian Callahan's news conference and all things Titans coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie and D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. And a piece of news to pass along that might be of interest to the Tennessee Titans, according to Dominique Yates of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Green Bay Packers quarterback Jordan Love is practicing today. Jordan Love is practicing today after suffering a sprained MCL in his left knee in week one against Philadelphia and sitting out in week two against Indianapolis. But according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Jordan Love is practicing today. So we'll see if perhaps the Titans could see Jordan Love on Sunday, or if it will be Malik Willis. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joins us.
No feel for good theater here. Come on. Where's your sense for the drama?
You mean from the Packers' perspective?
Yeah. We got to get Malik in there. This is what we want to see. Give the people what they want.
I completely agree with you, Willie. And the idea of Jordan Love kind of takes the bite out of my first question to Hutton, which is a couple of years ago, days after A.J. Brown had two touchdowns against the Titans in Philadelphia, we saw the firing of John Robinson. Yes. I am not saying that a firing would occur if the Titans lose to Malik Willis on Sunday. But if the Titans lose to Malik Willis on Sunday, falling to 0-3 against their discarded backup quarterback, what do you think the mindset of Titans decision makers will be in that scenario?
Closer to the mindset of the fan base, if this happens. I think it's going to be Malik, by the way. I think Jordan Love, their next game is in the division. They're hosting Minnesota, I believe, the last Sunday of the month. So I think this was a chance to get him going in practice. We'll see if he's limited or not. Losing to Malik Willis, let's phrase it like this. Whenever it was time for roster cutdown and we're having the discussion on this show about whether or not I would keep the third quarterback, I said no, because I would take that as if Malik is the third quarterback and you don't view him as the backup next year, why would you invest that roster spot? And I also added, I wouldn't mind facing the guy. So with this defense against Malik Willis, that's not the issue. The issue for me is not Malik Willis as much as it is the Tennessee Titans beating themselves. The self-inflicted wounds, which continue to happen dating back to last year, which is carried over this year.
No one anticipated Will Levis to make a boneheaded decision, or maybe most people. I certainly did not anticipate Will Levis making another play like he did in week one, but he did in week two. And he said after the game something that a lot of people have honed in on, including myself, this idea of having to rewire his brain in those situations. Now, to be fair to him, he has been under siege more than any other quarterback in the NFL in terms of the percentage of his dropbacks facing pressure. It just seems like a toxic formula of an offensive line that can't pass protect and a quarterback, when pressure arrives, quite frankly, does something stupid. So if you were coaching Will Levis, how would you go about trying to, quote unquote, rewire his brain so that when those situations arise, he doesn't make the plays he made in weeks one and two?
Well, if he's able to rewire his brain in a week, that makes last week even more egregious, repeating what he did in Chicago. There is a fine line here for me, because you want to take away the dumb mistakes that we've seen, the game-changing mistakes. And like the defense, they had allowed the fewest first half yards through 2 weeks. They still have. If you go back to Sunday and how they controlled that game, the offense had 11 first downs to one first down by New York. And then you have the Levis fumble. You cannot overstate how bad that moment was in the context of the flow and rhythm of that football game. And they lead at halftime of both games this season. They're 0-2. They've been outscored the second half 38-7. But I think it's important. Like, it's not about the mistakes per se, as it is the individual Superman complex that has been thrown out there. I think PK used that on Robbie and Rex Road. I agree, but I don't think you take that out of the player. You have to hone that in though. And he's got to know the situation and where they are in the game, where they are as a team right now. You know, they're 6-20 in their last one score games, in their last 26. Six wins, 20 losses, excuse me.
What a flip that is, because it used to be closer to the other way around.
Yo, no doubt. No doubt. And so they're 2-9 in their last 11 one-score games. And this is a carryover. And I think it's this is the message to Will Levis. We're watching the carryover from last season where he wasn't the starter for all of these games, but he contributed to this. We've seen the mistakes that have led to two losses this year. If you go back to week one last year, New Orleans, that game finished 16-15. It's a one-score league. The Titans are 0-2 this season, 2-9 in their last 11. Those two wins, by the way, Carolina and then the Miami Miracle, where they overcame plenty of problems. They had the muff punt that led to a score. Levis fumbled. Miami scored. It was 13-13. All of a sudden, it's 27-13. But they came back and won the game. Overcoming those self-inflicted mistakes and errors, it's rare in this league. And so 2-9 in one score games recently, starters playing within that stat, depth showing a huge fault in that stat as well. It's a problem, but it's more than just the quarterback, but the quarterback is a big part of the issue right now. And I would tell Will Levis this, and I think he's heard it, and any quarterback has heard it. He certainly heard it at Penn State. The backup quarterback, when you come into the game, you're asked to manage the game. You don't have to go win the game, but can you go in the game and help us not lose it? And right now, that's where I find myself asking Levis the same thing. If I'm coaching, I don't want to evaluate a conservative version of Will Levis. You want him to let it loose and let it rip, and that's what he did and how he responded to Callahan, you know, what the F are you doing comment. I mean, they came back out, threw down the field to Burks. Callahan's cool with that throw, he said, of that pick. He said it wasn't egregious. That he let it rip down the field to Calvin Ridley for an unbelievable catch. He had Hopkins running wide open 10 yards in front of him. That's Will Levis. That's the quarterback you want to evaluate. And I don't want to rein it in on the fishing line, but I do want to make it abundantly clear that you can't put the entire team, when it's going to be a one score game as it is, in a situation where you keep points off the board or you help the other team put points on.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton discussing the Tennessee Titans and their loss this past weekend to the New York Jets. Hutt, I hear everything that you're saying, but the one thing that I feel the team's going to have to do, they're going to have to, because you can't allow him, and listen, I've watched this game twice now, literally twice from an offensive standpoint. He has no patience. I'm going to repeat that. He has no patience, Hutton, because the minute he sees or he feels he needs to make a big play or he needs to make something happen, he would disregard the play that's sitting in front of him and he would try to take the deep shot. Under this circumstance, I hear what you're saying when you say, well, you got to let him be who he is. That's the only true evaluation you're going to get. Well, I let him be who he was the first two games, and it cost us. I can't do that anymore. I got to be able to evaluate him on my terms. And my terms is I got to be cautious with him because he doesn't know how to play patient football. He talked a lot about it in the offseason. Take the boring, play the boring football. Take the throws that are there in the minute, right there in your face. That sounds good to him, and he did it a little bit in the preseason. But he doesn't know how to do it when things get real, and he's proven it twice already. Matter of fact, he proved it last year as well, but we threw that year away for him. Those 10 games or 9 games we threw away from him, for him. But he's doing the same exact things this year that he did last year. He's not a patient quarterback, and you can't – you can't sit there and say, as much as you're more than likely you're right, I get that, but as a coordinator, as a head coach, as a leader of a team, it comes a point where you say, I got to evaluate you under my terms because I saw how it looked under your terms and it doesn't look good.
Well, can we also add to it offensive line.
Yeah,
that would speed up my clock. Mm-hmm. That would speed up my clock. But I mean, to what you're saying, Mace, I hear you. He's going for the bundle, right? The short passing game isn't necessarily there. The Jets did a good job of taking away the screen game, I felt like. But nonetheless, the other part is Callahan's still calling these plays, right? Like, he comes back after that egregious play with the flip, the toss, and throws up to Burks. I mean, Brian Callahan's calling that up. I view that as we're still going to try to let it rip. Here's the other thing, too. As much as I'm guilty focusing on the flip toss fumble. Mm-hmm. Okay. That can't happen. What you also want from your, what needs to be evaluated to me, and Derek, I'm fascinated to hear your answer to this. Mm-hmm. The first down play in the red zone where he has a chance to go and hit Ridley crossing right in the middle of the end zone there. It looked like, and I was watching, it was from Orlovsky put this out. To me, that's where you want to see the vast improvement is pull the trigger there and hit, and at worst, you have a chance to tie the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll also add in, take what Aaron Rodgers did as an example of what you're saying. He didn't make any of those errors to lose the game. He took what the defense gave him. And when it mattered at the end, he made the play. When it mattered at the end for Levis, don't you have to make that throw to Ridley on first down?
Yes, you have to make, and I know exactly which one you're talking about. You're talking about the pass that he ultimately threw to D-Hop. Here's the problem. Again, it goes back to what I was saying. Play patient football. If you're patient, you know that throw is going to come open. You know it's going to come open. You're watching the defense. I even knew, based upon what I was looking at from a defensive standpoint, if he runs an inside breaking route, it should be open. If it times right, if you anticipate it, you should be able to hit him right over, right where the goalpost is. You just got to be a little bit patient with it. He didn't. He looked at it quickly and went off of it. He has to learn. It takes a minute for a play to develop, especially in the red zone. If you see the coverage that you like, the guy was slightly inside, which told me, which should have told him, it's man-to-man. There's no safety help. Why? Because the guy is inside. He knows that he has to protect the inside. If I'm seeing this as a receiver, he needs to see it as a quarterback and anticipate the receiver making that in cut and you throwing it to him. He didn't do that. Why? Because he's not practicing patient football. He's not seeing it before it happens. He's waiting for it to happen and then throwing it. That's what his problem is. Again, it boils down to patient football. You're right. He should have hit D-Hop. I mean, he should have hit Calvin Ridley, but he didn't. He hesitated, looked to D-Hop, and then tried to throw a pass. D-Hop had no area to catch the ball in. He was right there by the sideline. That was just I'm going to throw it up and see what happens. No, what you should have did was read the defense right and anticipated the end break, and you should have thrown the ball to a spot and allowed Calvin Ridley to go get it, but you didn't.
I agree with you. You're the expert here on this. I just saw Ridley open.
What I'm saying is you're right in regards to him being open, but this is what – this is what's going to get him in trouble more times than not. It's either he's not being patient or he's trying to play YOLO ball. I'm getting it all back on one shot. The pass he threw to Treylon Burks, which we're going to get into later. I'm going to eviscerate anybody else that brings this play up. He should, again, if he's playing patient football, Calvin Ridley was coming wide open. Matter of fact, only thing you got to do is throw it to a spot and he will get it. No, what he wanted to do, he wanted the big chunk play. He wanted to go for it all. Instead of taking the profit, moving the ball down the field, 15, 20, 30 yards, and living to play another down. Yes. And the way he delivered that ball, it was never going to be caught.
And while Callahan has said that was the first read and he wants Levis to throw that pass. Levis doesn't look – he floats out to his left while he's looking at Burks the whole time. Again, I'm not dissecting what the reads are and what he's supposed to do. You're noticing who's open. I'm also noticing a quarterback that's floating out to his left because Nicholas Petit-Frere is on his right. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, how much of the progressions get either overlooked or sped up in his own mind, knowing that he's back there. He's not Stonehouse, but he's close to it. He's going to get killed.
Hutton, if you can stick with us for another segment, Willie has a question or two for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. 1025, 1063, the game. Willie and D. Mace, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan. Jonathan Hutton still with us. Willie, the floor is yours.
All right, Hut, I want to ask you, did were you a little surprised at that press conference that nobody asked about Mason Rudolph or anything like that? Just given how many national people have mentioned, hey, if you had the game manager in there, you might be 2-0.
I mean, that's the storyline. It happened week one. It happened week two. What happens if it goes down again? What are you doing moment again? And Mason Rudolph was brought in for a reason. You know, how short is this leash? And I think it's also relevant, Willie, even though I think we know the answer to it, I think it's relevant because Bryce Young was just benched after 18 games, two starts into the season with a new coordinator. I'm not saying the Titans should follow the Panthers by any means, but it makes the question relevant. And it's something that if I'm Callahan, I'm expecting to hear. So, yeah, I think the question should have been answered. But, you know, everyone's going after different stories there.
Another thing that caught my attention in that press conference was the amount of three wide receivers the Titans have shown. And we talked about this a lot throughout the offseason, even before training camp, that they were going to try to get out of this 2-3 tight end set, just the power game, overpower you. But with the way that some of those guys are struggling in pass protection, I do think it was an interesting question that Paul brought up.
Especially,
does there need to be a little more help for those guys with the tight ends?
Yes. But, you know, especially because, you know, the number of tight ends they kept originally, right? Like, you kept these guys for a reason. I'm adding an extra tight end to help out there. But then you can't run the type of offense they want to run, right?
That's the dilemma. You can tell he doesn't want to do it. But, and I think they have struggled, but we have to keep that in context. Last year, they kept all those guys in and they still couldn't protect the quarterback, right? They're struggling to protect the quarterback, but they are running their offense. So I see both sides of that. And before we let you go, Hut, we're short on time.
Yep.
But I liked how he answered the question about having faith in the process, meeting with the leadership group. To me, for a rookie head coach, I think that's the right thinking for the situation they're in.
And he's stressed Levis in particular. He's one of 11. He wants him to have that mindset. Leadership group certainly is relaying that to him. And the group must play more winning football. We've seen phases of that, not all three phases of that. You can point out 1, 2, 3 plays that aren't being made that if they are, there's a different result. And we're 2 weeks into the season. The panic button, it's pressed sooner rather than later if they continue to down this losing path. But at this point, you can't throw in the towel if you're Callahan 2 games into your career as a head coach.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow joining us as he does every Wednesday. Hutton, thanks for talking. Talk next week.
Yeah, always enjoy this, guys. Have a great rest of the week.
All right, you too.
Thanks, Hutton. 615-737-1025. Thanks for talking. That was a really weird thing to say. I should probably work on that, considering now I'm talking into the microphone a lot. This is why it took so long to find a woman who loved me, because I couldn't spit out the word. 615-737-1025. Tune into 93.3 FM, Totally Hits Nashville this Saturday. For MTSU football, the Blue Raiders will take on the Duke Blue Devils at Floyd Stadium. Pre-game starts at 1:30 p.m. and kickoff is at 3. Coverage also available on the 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com.